And welcome back to the Zumundo 1 year anniversary special part two. And we're going to go ahead and dive into it with Comic Man. Here we go.
Comic Man from Baltimore. He's got more books than a comic store. From X-Men to Fantastic Four, all the sagas he's explored. It's time to check in with Comic
Man. And we are on with Comic Man for this very special episode. Charles, Comic Man, so good to have you back here with us. It's been a couple of weeks since we've had you, man. How you been doing?
Yeah, I have been busy. Softball season finally ended with 6 games in 9 days in 4 cities in about 3 different climates. Because Maryland only has like 1 season and it's all of them.
Well, we appreciate you out there, you know, giving back to the community and, you know, coaching for the softball teams, man. It's really awesome. You're getting out there and doing that.
No, I appreciate it. It's fun. We ended with a 21-7 drubbing of JFK High, which was a nice way to end the season on a high note and just, you know, wake them up. And they lost to a team they shouldn't have lost to. And
JFK never saw it coming, man.
No, that's twice we've taken them out. You think after the first time you get better detail, but nah.
I think I made that joke last time, so I'll refrain from doing it again. But yeah,
it's brutal.
It's fun.
Yeah,
you know, absolutely. They lost to a team they shouldn't have lost to, and it was like the first time I saw them get really mad, and they were just, I was like, good, you should be mad, because that team was garbage. You should have beaten them. They're like, we know that. We wake up now. And then they scored 7 runs in 2 combined games, and then they woke up and they scored a 45 in the next 2 games. They just like, it was like a switch flip. I was like, yeah, my girls, you get it. So well, yeah, it's good times.
Congratulations on a great season, man. And tell us.
Thank you.
And living up to your namesake, what's going on? What's good on the shelves this week?
Well, this week, for those who don't know, this is Free Comic Book Day on Saturday, tomorrow. Saturday the 4th is every first Saturday of May.
Okay.
Is the Free Comic Book Day. And all the main companies, they produce like special issues that are just to be given out for free. Most of them are like very short stories like to introduce you and like, you know, entice you to get like new series coming up. Sometimes they'll do like a reprint of like an issue, like, you know, to get you to go, you know, back. Mm-hmm. So if you liked this issue, you can collect the other 5 issues are collected in the trade paperback or whatever. But it's the last couple of years, they've been really trying to get like all original storylines to tease big events like coming up, like in the X-Men, Spider-Man. The big event that started this week for Marvel Comics is the Blood Hunts. It's a 5-issue miniseries by Jed McKay, and it's vampires versus the Marvel Universe.
Ooh.
And you know, they've done every once in a while, they try to dust off vampires and try to make them a thing. Mm-hmm. And they did it back in 2004 when they had X-Men series, the Curse of the Mutants it was a cool story. It was mostly contained vampires versus X-Men. It was to launch a new X-Men book by Victor Gishler, the writer, and it was pretty cool. But like then the vampires were set up to be this big thing, and we saw them again during Fear Itself, where Hulk fought Dracula, and didn't really go anywhere except for like Blade comics, which don't really ever sell very well. But this Blood Hunt story now is like.
Did you read the
first entire
one?
The sun? The first issue was bonkers.
It was insane.
I don't want. I'm not going to spoil the twist. The twist is one of those things where, if it's done right, whoever the big bad is not who everyone expected it to be, and we do find out, at least on the surface, who the big bad is at the end of issue one, and it's a great twist. It's one that's been kind of done before, but like. If it's done right, it really works well. And obviously, they're gonna. I trust Jed McKay, who's writing it, to like really peel back and find out what made this particular character the antagonist for him.
I want to know how they took out what kind of magic is powerful enough to put Thor down like they did. You know what I mean? Like that was nuts. I was like,
there's a whole new team of like that the big bad has of like, you know, super vampires that have apparently being like hidden in the shadows, and they're being fed. They're being fed off of different abilities, and they're all trained to take someone out.
That's
all
not the carnivore guy.
Like,
no,
this one can take out all like magic. This one focuses on like, you know, godly power, stuff like that. They've basically been genetically engineered vampires to take out the Avengers. That was like step one was take out the sun, block out the sun with dark force energy. Mm-hmm. Step two is
like
create all of these riots at simultaneous, all these like simultaneous portals opening up around the world in high population centers to destabilize things. Step three, take out the Avengers, and now they've already done those three in the first issue. So it's it escalated damn quickly.
My prediction is Dracula is going to be the hero of the story.
Really?
Ooh. I would love to see that. Because Dracula's done, and that was one of the big things is, I won't spoil who the bad guy is, but I can tell you it's not Dracula, and that's what everyone's suspecting. And even in the comic books, they're saying themselves, they're like, we don't think Dracula would do something like this because he's worked so hard to establish his own little vampire nation that kind of has this, like, you know, don't want none, don't start none relationship with everyone around them.
Mm-hmm.
And he's really been working hard to just keep that around, and this entire thing is completely not within his power scope or within his recent thing, because we've seen a lot in the Blade comics and in the Avengers comics over the last couple of years where they've really been establishing this kind of like detente with the vampire nation.
I was going to actually, not to cut you off or derail, but we just saw a thing, maybe somebody was explaining the comic, where Blade actually met up with Dracula and he taught him like a bunch of stuff about his powers, like increased his power.
Those are in the Blade series.
Yeah, that was pretty cool, man. Very, yeah. Very interesting dynamic between those two characters.
Yeah, Blade's been – they've been trying to make Blade a little bit more of a player in the last couple of years, like having him even be on part of
Wesley Snipes is a player, okay?
Oh, man, Wesley Snipes, man. Always trying to skate uphill.
Those movies are sick.
Those movies are awesome. I love them. But yeah, they've really been trying to make him, like, you know, more integrated into it instead of the Fringe. Because like we've talked about the cosmic side of Marvel, but like that supernatural side is another side that doesn't get enough love, like the Ghost Rider and Midnight Suns and all that stuff, and they're all coming back again now for interesting. This.
I think it doesn't sell for them. Like it was from what I've noticed. They always have a hard time pushing it. I mean, I like those stories.
They're great. Yeah,
but I don't think for some reason comic book people fan base, like people that are in the comics, aren't into old school supernatural. Stuff I get. That's the. I mean, I don't understand. Otherwise, I mean,
I recently reread like from the 90s, the Midnight Suns, and then they had like the Siege of Darkness and the Midnight Massacre and all that stuff. There's this whole like mega arc. That was when Midnight Suns came out, and when they introduced that concept, it was like it was Ghost Rider and Dan Ketch Ghost Rider and Johnny Blaze. And then it had introduced, like, you know, the Night Stalkers, and Morbius had his own series, and it was Morbin time for everybody.
Weird Doctor Strange.
Doctor Strange. Mm. Yeah, with like the Doctor eye Strange. Patch and everything like that.
I have an eye patch.
And they had the Darkhold, Darkhold's been like, you know, we've seen that mentioned Marvel universe now. Hannibal King was one of the Night Stalker.
That's who Ryan Reynolds played in.
Of course. Era. Before he was Deadpool when he was Deadpool.
Don't start. He's part of the MCU twice.
That's true.
It's true.
Don't be jelly. Yeah.
In that movie.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you mentioned
Jessica Biel, who was smoking ripped. In that movie.
Dude, yes, she was.
Who was ripped?
Ryan Reynolds. Well, so Jessica Biel was too. They were both.
He's always been kind of cut.
But in that movie, he was like, he was yoked. He was yoked.
Yeah.
She was just, ooh, her butt in that movie. Yeah. Fantastic. Fantastic.
Blaze really cracks me up.
Right? Yeah, Ryan. Ryan got,
I actually made sure
that. He got Canadian yoked for that. Yeah.
So what we're going to get.
Yeah.
Carnivore.
Yeah, no, well, the carnivore diet. We're working on it.
It was actually just on a couple of nights ago or something, on some random channel. I was watching some of it. I was watching the scene where he fights Triple H, actually.
Yeah.
And he, like, shoves, like, you know,
Triple H is part of the MCU. Yeah.
If they pull him, they did kill him off because, you know, he's Triple H.
I always say that. I know people are like, that's not part of the MCU. And I'm like, well, it's
kind of is. It's connected to the multiverse at this point. So
it's
that was the first MCU film.
Yeah, first Marvel Studios movies. Yeah, right?
Yeah.
The big ones. So, they were fun. I mean, like the original one is still like cheesy fun. The second one gets a lot of love, and I gotta say, I don't like the second one very much.
Is that the one where the vampire's mouth
actually? I really like part two.
I like
Blade Two a lot.
It's not that I dislike it. It's just that for some reason I just don't like it as much as the other ones. Mm-hmm. I think because it tried to take itself a little more seriously than the other ones did. The other ones like leaned into like the camp. And like the second one seemed to be like it was like, you know, more going for that, like I'm a little bit more, because it's Del Toro, so you know that does the second one, you know, mm-hmm. Guillermo del Toro, so it's definitely got like a higher, like, you know, level of like, you know, craftsmanship than the other two did.
I
met him in San Diego Comic-Con 2006.
Cool. Del Toro
and Doug Jones, like before they
hung out
because I had passes for the because I was actually working it. So we all hung out in the green room before things. I didn't even know who he was, to be honest, at that time, because it was 2006. So he was telling me, because we were talking, and he's like, oh, somehow I talked about my dad working at the post office. And he's like, oh, I used to be a postman back in the, that was my first, one of my first jobs. I'm like, oh, that's crazy.
It's like Kevin Costner.
Like a real postman.
Yeah, right. In the apocalypse.
So that's cool, man. So we've got that one in for,
Let's do a deep dive on Blade.
That's the big one. The Blood Hunt.
The Blood Hunt.
Blood Hunt is the big, because this week, a lot, like I said, it's Free Comic Book Day, so there's a lot of different things coming out. So it wasn't really a huge week of releases.
Did you read the Avengers, kind of like an Elseworlds story about the Avengers in the future?
Oh, Twilight?
Twilight, yeah.
Avengers Twilight?
Yep.
Yeah. It's like the Dark Knight Rises,
but the Avengers. The end of that was like
you're doing it.
Was pretty good.
Yeah.
I kind of figured the whole time though, when they were talking about what are they called? The World War H or no, the H bot. No, God, what phrase did they use when they talked H day? So right away I was like, oh, that's gotta be Hulk.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an alternate future where things have gone wrong. And, an event happens, Nino says H day, and it's turned the world against, all the Avengers are disbanded. And Tony Stark and the Wasp's son is this megalomaniac, ultra rich guy who controls things a little bit too much. And we're seeing this really cool thing where people are starting to fight against him, an underground resistance with led by Luke Cage and Captain America getting back into the action.
I don't understand how Luke Cage is all screwed up though. Why is he all that part?
He looks. If you guys read Kingdom Come, Luke Cage is being given the Bruce Wayne treatment. Remember Bruce Wayne wearing the neck brace and all that stuff in Kingdom Come. He's older, and that's what Luke Cage is like. And they haven't really explained exactly why, because Luke is invulnerable and he shouldn't be deteriorating on a physical level.
Even in that issue, they say he's still super strong and invulnerable. So I'm like, how did he end up being a cripple? Happens,
maybe during H day.
Oh, that's a good point.
Your vulnerability only goes as far when the Hulk is kicking your ass.
That's true.
They haven't really gone into it, but it's a really cool little story. Ultron is involved, and Red Skull is involved. It's a really cool.
Good old Johan.
It's the Chip Zdarsky. Yeah, it's the Chip Zdarsky that I wish was writing Batman right now, because the Chip Zdarsky writing Batman is just not doing it for me.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those writers that's you can just sometimes if they're on, they're on, and when they're off, you have Batman right now. Mm-hmm. It's just not working for me. This is working.
Quick question. I don't know if in this past week, did you happen to pick up the Deadpool and Wolverine World War III that they're promoting?
I did. I did. It was a really confusing issue, to be honest. I had to read it the second time.
It's just kind of there to promote the movie, maybe? Or
it's definitely some sort of the corporate synergy that makes
this,
because it's a 3-issue miniseries that happens to conclude in July when the movie comes out.
There you go.
I mean, anyone you can draw the through line there.
Right.
But it is fun, because at least the two characters do have a history in the comic
of
books,
course.
And they do have connections. So at least it's not Miss Marvel and Deadpool out of nowhere. Completely throw off the dynamics.
Right.
So it's an interesting thing. I got a sidebar to Miss Marvel. There's a lot of chatter coming out and a lot of denials back and forth. Cody Ziegler is currently writing Miles Morales' comic book and a Spider-Punk comic.
Mm-hmm.
And he was doing some sort of interview, and he claimed that it was Kevin Feige and a lot of people involved on the movie side of things that forced Marvel Comics to kill off Kamala Khan, Miss Marvel, and bring her back the way they did. And they're denying that they did it for any sort of corporate synergy, because the way it worked in the comics is she died in Amazing Spider-Man 25, and they brought her back almost instantly for the X-Men and found out that not only is she an Inhuman, but she's also the direction they're trying to go with her in the MCU, mm-hmm. on the live action stuff. And he's claiming that it was a really hard directive coming from up top, and he's pointing to all these things. The fact that Kamala Khan appeared in 17 total pages over the first 25 issues of Spider-Man, and then suddenly was important enough to the plot that she had to be killed off to save the day, immediately resurrected, like in another book in the X-Men a couple of weeks later. It seems to point to that, but like everyone in Marvel is like, no, he's out of his mind. You guys are crazy. So it's an interesting little behind the scenes, like leaks that are coming out. I mean, okay. Ziggler at least is keeping his job. So, I mean, like he hasn't gotten into, he's also writing Deadpool right now.
Okay.
So I think that's why he's getting a little extra attention. So, but it's that was an interesting little tidbit that came from behind the scenes.
All right. And I'm kind of interested in this one that I'm looking at for Free Comic Day, Absolute Power, the prelude to the biggest DC Comics event of 2024, allegedly. Yes. I don't know. Was that on your list today?
It's Absolute Power. They're actually going to do this weekend for Free Comic Book Day. There's going to be like an Absolute Power like special edition. That's going to be like a little primer for it. That's one of the free comic offerings from DC.
I see that Mark Waid's on it.
It's been being teased around. He had been being teased around ever since the end of the Dark Crisis storyline. What, for whatever reason, Amanda Waller has really got it hard up against superheroes, against all powers. She went to Earth 3. She went to Earth 3 with a crime syndicate. Earth 3 is the Earth where like everyone's in reverse. So like not like Bizarro reverse, but like all the good. There's no Justice League. It's the crime syndicate.
They did a film on that, like an animated movie.
So it's she went there and she basically like took it over and she was like part of my like squad and stuff like that. And she's been like working behind the scenes. And during the recent Titan storyline, they did Beast World and Beast Boy. And so Beast Boy, like he had to stop this alien invasion. He had to basically like he can turn into any animal he wants to. He basically synced up and used his powers in a way he hadn't done before and became Starro for all intents and purposes. But he lost control over it. So instead of Starro coming out and like attaching to your faces, like, you know, in the comics and like in the cartoons and stuff like that, he was basically the Starros were hunting out anybody with superpowers and like going down their throats and making them into these like animal, like, you know, super like, you know, alien hybrids.
Okay.
So it was causing it was causing this whole disruption. So they had to take him out. And of course, Waller used that to her advantage to say, hey, look, you know, superhumans can't be trusted. If one of them loses control, they can ruin the entire world. She was willing to, she actually convinced the president to issue a kill order for the millions or so of people that were infected to kill everyone. And she was going to use that as part of her like platform and stuff like that. But the Titans wound up saving the day because there's still no Justice League. Justice League has been disbanded since Dark Crisis. Oh. The Titans are the team to go in the DC universe. Okay. So she was using this to her advantage. And now the big story that's coming out with Absolute Power is she just got double crossed by Brainiac. We just learned that in this week's these last couple of weeks where we find out that Brainiac and her had a deal that he's reneged on, that she's also double crossing him. So, but she's going to be, Brainiac is creating this new like a female version of himself, like for whatever reason we haven't learned yet in the storyline House of Brainiac happening right now between Superman and Action Comics. So we're going to have this, they're calling it this new Trinity of Evil, where we have we have Amanda Waller, we have this Brainiac Queen, and we have Failsafe. And Failsafe is, remember when Batman did the Tower of Babel, he had a plan to take everybody out.
I do recall that.
Well, and during Mark Waid's run,
in case anybody ever goes rogue, Batman's ready for it. Even himself, right? Like he's just like
That's what Failsafe is. Failsafe is this thing that basically has been designed to take him out of the picture. That he didn't even realize he was building entirely, but like the Zur and Arg personality that he like created to like, you know, decompartmentalize his mind, that was really big during the Grant Morrison era, helped do a lot of it without him even really knowing it. So like Failsafe was a big part of Chip Zdarsky's run, and that's going to be another major feature. So between the Brainiac Queen and Failsafe and Amanda Waller, they're just going to wipe they're basically trying to take away all the Meta's powers in some way and create this whole new team and just take over the world. So that's what the Absolute Power story is going to be about. Okay. So it's shaping up to be big. We've seen some, we had like a little bit of like teases of it throughout the last couple of years. And right now there's a storyline that I have to say, Nicole Maines is writing it and I'm impressed by her writing. And I don't know if you guys, Nicole Maines was on the Supergirl series. She played Dreamer.
Okay.
All right. And she became like really known because she's a huge trans activist.
Okay.
And she's a trans woman, and she played the role of Dreamer. She played as a trans woman in a comic book. That's not who Dreamer is. And they changed that for the Supergirl show. And then they added her version of the character into the comics. Mm. And now she's writing a 4-issue miniseries, a Suicide Squad Dream Team, where Dreamer is basically being co-opted by Amanda Waller to help her assemble these things. And she's trying to do it as bloodlessly as she can, because she's trying to like get out from underneath Waller's control. Mm-hmm. Because Waller wants to use like her power of prophecy to like, you know, like figure stuff out. But, Nicole Maines is actually writing it solo, and it's damn good. Okay. You know, I don't think she's ever written comics before, but like, I'll give credit where it's due, because like the, right now, the one who plays Miss Marvel, mm-hmm. is co-writing Miss Marvel series. It's been really, really good, but I don't know how much of the writing she's doing versus her co-writer, who's been writing comics a while.
Okay.
So it's really, really awesome. But like, this is Nicole Maines like by herself, and she is killing this book. It's really, really good. So that's kind of like serving as the prelude to this Absolute Power. It's a 4-issue miniseries that's going to segue directly into this. It's even like has like the Road to Absolute Power written all over it and stuff like that. So it's going to be interesting. That's going to be DC's big event. Marvel's got Blood Hunt, and then they've immediately got like, I'm sure they've got like two or three other things. They've got Venom War coming up, which is going to pit the symbiotes again, which they're just overusing the hell out of the symbiotes, but we'll see what happens with that. That's going to be Carnage back and Venom and like all that stuff going on. It's been a little crazy the last couple of years, but the X-Men will be leading. They're ending their current era right now. Mm-hmm. And they're hurtling towards like a new era with new books being released and allegedly a new event at the end of the year that's going to bring all the X-Men books together again.
And not on this episode today, but at some point I really want to just do like a crazy deep dive into the Marvel sliding time scale. Not today, because that's a rabbit hole we don't need to go down right now.
it's funny because
like, go ahead.
Well, it's because like Marvel doesn't, DC does, in as far as like reboot their entire universe. They'll retcon things, they'll change some stuff around, but they won't do like DC after a crisis, like completely like rebooted everything. After Flashpoint, obviously it was a big reboot. So like there's a reason for that with the X-Men. They kind of have to like Magneto. Why is he still so? He should be like 100 years old. Well, you know, now he's in a clone body. He was a baby for a while. Now he's an adult.
I saw a joke that somebody had posted recently about the sliding time scale, and it was the Punisher, and he's sitting there, and he's like, "I was in the war," and somebody said, "Which one?" He said, "The last one."
that's exactly it. like some characters, like they stay consistent, like Wolverine. Like, you know, you can get away with it because he's got the healing factor, and Captain America's got the super soldier.
Yeah, Captain America was always in World War II because he was frozen, so that's fine. Like, we just, you know,
yeah. Well, those things, like, and like I said, with Magneto, they like had it. With Magneto, they had it like, you know, his bioelectricity like, you know, helps retard his age a little bit, or he does you know, like for a while he was like in a baby's body, and then he was like given like a he was artificially like aged up to like a human, but like it's like even Xavier has been given like a clone body in the past, so it's like there's a little, some of the old people, they have little excuses, but like Tony Stark, it's like Tony Stark's been in Vietnam. He's been in every war since Vietnam.
Of course.
Tony Stark's origin.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've talked about the Marvel comic heroes aging interestingly and being reset periodically. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you have any anything else on the shelves before we jump into our deep dive today?
Mm-hmm. No, like I said, we're in that kind of limbo period of, you know, this is typically the time of year where, because Free Comic Book Day is coming up, and we're hitting into the summer months where mm-hmm. both companies are generally gearing up towards like their massive like summer events. And like, you know, we say we have like some Blood Hunt and Venom War.
Yeah.
All right. Speaking coming up of on, Venom, on
the immediate horizon from
is that a good
Marvel sound? We have this Absolute Power coming up.
There we go. Sorry, you cut in and out of there, but we got you. It's so, all right. No, it's okay.
Yeah, Venom.
So, speaking of Venom, go ahead, man.
Here's my segue. So speaking of Venom, in a roundabout way, I finally finished everything in the legendary Marvel superhero series known as Marvel Superheroes Secret Wars. And I wanted to talk to you about this. And we're talking about the original Secret Wars from 1984. I know there's others, and we'll probably... I'm not well-versed in those. I know you and Nino know a lot about them. But what a wild story. And I have to say, like, you know, I read Infinity Gauntlet. Awesome. I got a lot out of that. Going back and reading this stuff older is really cool. But this one is extremely unique and really cool. So I kind of wanted to get your take on it, and we can talk about some crazy plot points. Spoiler alert for everybody. We're going to talk about this book in probably some detail, or several books. It's what, 12 issues. And then there's the tie-ins from the actual comics that these people came from.
But it's also been 40 years.
It's so, been 40 years. I think we're good. So
they got to get on it.
It's been 40 years.
Yeah, well, oh God.
Oh fuck my life.
It's actually 40 years to almost to the date, because it came out in May of 84 was the publication.
So we're in May of 24.
I remember going through the Sears and JCPenney's and like.
Oh yeah,
and seeing the Marvel Secret Wars toys on the shelves.
Wow.
Well, this was a series that was almost exclusively designed in a way to sell toys. Indeed. It was really funny because it was originally called when they first announced it was called the Cosmic Champions, and Mattel of all people did like a focus group and was like, you know what, you know what kids really like? They like the words Wars and Secret, and they pushed Marvel to like, right. and Marvel was like, you know what, that sounds great. I guess I'll go with it. It's like when the Simpsons were taken over. Like, remember when the Simpsons were taken over by like the toy company that came to the schools and was teaching them all about like fabric stuff and stuff like that? That's basically what happened. Marvel became like, okay, this is what the toy companies want. Let's do it. So they started getting like all these like vehicles that people didn't need. Like, why does Iron Man need a vehicle? He's Iron Man.
Why is
Dr. Doom driving around? You know, Dr. Doom's got a motorcycle now. Okay, great. Dr. Doom awesome.
Basically does whatever he wants.
I remember making that joke when I saw like the Spider-Man mobile.
Dude, and, don't you ever say anything
and
about
I was just like, it invokes this image of like Spider-Man stuck in traffic looking at his watch, like, God, if only there was an easier way.
Dude, that Spider-Mobile was badass. Like, it could stick on walls. It was
they even gave him his own spot in he's even got his own spot in the Spider-Verse. His name is Peter Parkedcar.
That's really funny.
And he goes, that's amazing. That's one of my favorite like alternate Spider-Man names. Is Peter Parkedcar.
That's pretty funny.
It's unnecessarily clever.
So
the only thing I've ever seen more clever, honestly, the only thing I've ever seen more clever than that is when I worked for Lockheed Martin, we worked with TSA, the Traverse City, Michigan's, their address, their mailing address is 747 Fly Don't Drive.
That's like hilarious. The most
clever thing. I was like, I will never forget that address as long as I live.
That is clever.
That's a dad joke location. I love it.
How do you like that? Being clever. Keep it up. What movie was that?
That was Fight Club.
Oh yeah, that's classic. Good movie. Anyway, we're not talking about Fight Club. So this was a
not like, allowed to.
Basically exactly, it's rule number one. This was a big special event where we combined, I'm not going to say every superhero, but we combined
a lot of them. It was a big crossover event
and massive crossover
event. Ones.
And it's not even everybody's favorite version of this. For example, Tony Stark is out in California when this all goes down, and the other Iron Man is in this story, right?
We got Rhodey in it.
Rhodey,
yeah. So that's cool and weird, and it works. There's, I mean, before we get it, love triangles. Weird relationships, crazy combat, problem solving, mystery. There's a lot that goes into this. And, my takeaway is that I actually really like Dr. Doom overall, because he's such a unique character, and he gets to shine a little bit.
Dr. Doom is one of the Galactus most interesting characters in all of Marvel.
You think so?
I think so.
Yeah, he's so much more than... And just like, you know, it's just like this like crazy like power hungry dictator, but like when you get really like beneath the surface, he's got so many layers to him that they've really done, a lot of writers have done a really good job getting to.
You know what he seems like? He seems like a guy that's had enough life experience and cynical things happen to him that he's very observant and I would honestly say, and I could be wrong here, you might disagree, doesn't always know what he wants, but kind of always, he's got the end goal in mind, you know, like he doesn't like,
he's a big picture guy.
He doesn't like to lose. And I don't like to lose either. And it's something that Dr. Doom does quite often. And I feel like a lot of people do. So they have a lot in common with him, you know?
And he's willing to go as far, like, even when he was like back, like during Mark Waid's run of Fantastic Four, like he decided to really lean into like his like supernatural side, because his mom was a witch and stuff like that.
Right, right.
And like he made an armor that was like had like runes that were like he had a sacrifice.
That was the baddest looking armor. Yeah, like his,
can you say the thing?
But like his childhood love, like he literally like, you know, killed her to take her skin for this armor and stuff like that. Like, he was not, he's like, this is what I got to do. Like, he's like, sorry, I had to say, it's like when Thanos had to sacrifice Gamora.
All business.
This was his version of that. It's like, I love you, but not enough.
Yeah.
Exactly. So you don't love anything. Like,
he's willing to get it done.
He actually does. He loves you. And now you're dead. And he's
got now you're yeeted off of cliff.
Yeah, that was the soul.
Got an orange rock for her.
Soulstone. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Soulstone.
Nino has a good quick rundown. I'm sorry to put you on the spot because you haven't thought about this. Of what Doctor Doom is. He's the second best
sorcerer,
and
he could have been Sorcerer Supreme, but
he's also like, he's like technologically, he's second only to,
he's always the runner up. He's like the bridesmaid, never the bride. So like all of the different disciplines, there's always someone just right above him that he just hates that they're right above him.
But the thing is, he's so diverse though. Like that's why he puts all the rest of them to shame. Even though he's the second best at it, he's got the second best at all these major groups like cosmic, magic, technology. Like he's the shit. Like,
yeah, he's crazy. He's awesome. Sorry, we're simping for Dr. Doom right now.
His name is Dr. Doom. Sounds badass.
That is badass.
Victor Von Doom. Mm-hmm. It's better than the ultimate version that made him Victor Van Damme, which made it sound like Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Oh, God. Well, he is the second best martial artist too, probably.
and they gave him cloven hooves. It was ridiculous.
Awful. Oh, that sounds horrible. All right. So
it's bad.
So Jim Shooter wrote this one, right? Am I wrong?
Jim Shooter felt that he was the only one who could write it, actually. Jim Shooter was like, this is my baby and no one else can write it but me.
So
and
he's
it was
first
like,
best.
All right, dude. Weird flex, dude. Yeah, exactly. He was first best.
Yeah.
So like, Jim Shooter was like, this is my toy. No one touches it.
So my kids started reading the preamble, right? And if you buy the trade paperback, I recommend it to read it that way, unless you are like Comic Man and you have all these.
Right.
But there's parts of Amazing Spider-Man number 249 to 252, The Avengers 242 to 243, Captain America 292, Incredible Hulk 294 and 295. I'm reading this off Wikipedia. Iron Man 181, 183, The Thing 10 to 22, Fantastic Four. I'm just going to throw this up. Marvel, The Uncanny X-Men 178 to 181, and Thor 341. And why there's more, but why this is important is because basically in New York City, in Central Park, which we all know and love, a giant ship thing, a building kind of appears, and everybody's kind of drawn to this thing, and all your favorite superheroes that happen to be in New York at the time,
which is most of them,
get drawn into, except for like Tony Stark and stuff. There's other people in it. They get drawn to go see and investigate this thing. Cause something's happening. We don't know what it is. Got to investigate. We're the good guys. Right. So the Avengers, the X-Men, everybody ends up here, and they all walk into this crazy portal situation, basically out of a childlike, curiosity, right? You walk into this giant thing, you don't know what it is, but everybody's first instinct, and this is kind of like, I kind of like talk shit about everybody because it's like, dude, you guys just walk into this portal basically without like, hey, what is this? I don't know. Let's go check it out. What could possibly go wrong? and like everybody does. I mean, Incredible Hulk shows up, right? And goes in. He's what's the smart thing to do?
Which version of the Hulk is this exactly?
It's actually the combination. It's the Hulk and Bruce Banner.
He is Smart Hulk at this point.
Yeah.
Okay. He's smart. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's not just Smash Hulk.
That was the first time I think, in Marvel when he became a Smart Hulk,
which is really cool.
Smart Hulk is much cooler.
Yeah.
Is it half the three quarters of the Fantastic Four go, or does everybody go?
No, everybody goes.
Everybody goes. Invisible One goes too. Okay. Yeah. So you got like the team of teams here, you know,
And well, no, wait. Sue's not in it.
Sue's not in it.
She's, well, she might be on Earth still.
Sue doesn't get taken to Battleworld.
Yeah, but she's in it, but she stays back. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Kitty Pryde stays back because there's a whole Colossus. Like, I love Kitty, and now I'm here, which we're going to get to in one second here. So basically, everybody gets sent to this place by the Beyonder. We can skip over the whole creation of the planet and everything, but they get sent to this place called Battleworld. And this guy, the entity, the cosmic entity, Beyonder, says, if you defeat your enemies, I'll basically give you, slay your enemies, and all that you desire shall be yours. Nothing you dream of is impossible for me to accomplish. So that guy sounds pretty powerful, right? And we on the other side of this, we got some bad guys, right? We've already talked about Dr. Doom.
Yeah.
We've got Absorbing Man. We've got Dr. Octopus. Mm-hmm. We've got the Enchantress, Kang the Conqueror, which that's really funny. Claw, the Lizard, Molecule Man, who really gets to shine in this story. Tatiana. Ultron.
Titania.
My bad. Tatiana. Yeah, that's spelled different. Ultron. I read the whole comic and called her Tatiana. Oh, my God. Ultron, Volcana, and the Wrecking Crew. And you also get Galactus, like I said.
Yeah, Galactus kind of shows up. He's like not aligned, but he's just kind of like, I'll see what's going on. He's pretty cool.
Yeah, he's kind of interesting in this. And I think you get a little bit more understanding of Galactus, even though he technically doesn't care what you guys are doing.
Yeah, he's just kind of, he's kind of there to see what's going on.
Yeah.
He was just there. He was just there to eat.
So I'll give a little bit of setups here. So right away, everybody's thrown into the mix and they're like, oh crap. What do we do now? Well, they immediately put Captain America in charge. Of the good guys. And Galactus sort of goes on the bad guy side. I'm going to go figure out what's going on, and I'm just going to go find this Beyonder right away.
Galactus does this?
Yeah. So what does Dr. Doom do? I'm going to follow Galactus and go solve this problem, and I don't care what's going on here. So they basically, they go OFP right away, right? Like their own effing program. And, you know, the superheroes are like, well, what do we do now? We need order and structure and blah, blah, blah. And then they start finding all these cool things like a base, you know? Like a good guy base. And there's a ton of
base you could sell to children.
Yes. Toys, toys. Everybody remember the toys thing. You got all the superheroes, all the supervillains, everybody's together. Some of the lower selling ones, like, I don't think anybody's going out and buying a Molecule Man toy until they see this. And they're like, oh, Molecule Man.
But it comes with this.
So they go and they set up these bases, and they're basically pitted to fight each other. It's freaking Ultimate Fighting Championship Avengers edition, right?
I remember when they did it on the Spider-Man animated series, they really simplified it and broke it down, but it was just the Beyonder of like, I just want to see who would win, like, essentially.
And
it's like every kid's story, smashing action figures together. That's what it was.
Yep. Yeah, your He-Man characters playing with Spider-Man and all kinds of stuff, right?
Yeah, it was just a fun little, let's do this.
Yeah. So, you know, the villains and heroes have a few skirmishes. There's some drama in the beginning, right? Because we're like, oh, we got to fight. Yay. Galactus tries to confront the Beyonder, like we said. They're both defeated, him and Dr. Doom. Everybody else is at Battleworld. And basically, like, Kang and a couple of people try to flex early on. And if you guys want to talk about this, this is hilarious. Like, Kang gets annihilated. Kang the Conqueror, the big villain from the MCU, the big bad that we were plotting on, gets punked on a level that I feel like.
Well, even Ultron gets punked right.
From the get go.
Ultron gets taken.
Yeah, and by their own people.
Yep.
Yeah, like the bad guys are like, yeah.
Well, no, Galactus destroys Ultron.
Did Galactus do it or Molecule Man?
No, it was Galactus.
Okay.
Because Ultron accidentally stung him like with a blast, and Galactus was like, "Nope, you touched me."
And then you're gonna
suck out all your energy,
and they actually brought Ultron back for the story because he had been destroyed before, and he was like, and then he gets killed right away. Kang, who's like, I'm freaking awesome, basically, like, let's go. Dr. Doom's like, you're annoying, and you got to go, and he like vaporizes him.
They have a very their relationship is very weird because it's not known whether. Kang is a relative of Reed Richards or of Dr. Doom, but he's a relative of one of the two.
Hmm. Well, we have some confirmation that he has as the recent slots run, Fantastic Four, like Council of gets together, and one of them we find out is in disguise as Reed Richards, and the only way he was able to infiltrate them is because he shared the same DNA, or else they would have like been able to recognize him. So it's not confirmed. It's still up in the air. Is he Nathaniel Richards? Is he that? Because that's been the thing. But you're right, though. It's oscillated back and forth. Is he Reed's? Is he Victor's? Or if he's both? That'd be cool.
That's what I was about to say. I think it would be cool if he was a relative of both.
That would be cool.
That would make more sense.
Good family tree there, you know? Good stock.
Because remember, Dr. Doom is Valeria Richards' godfather. Mm-hmm. Sue and Reed's second kid. So I mean, like, who knows what's going to happen in the future? You know, on a long enough time scale where that could like somehow work out.
Yeah,
it becomes very like much like Dark on Netflix, where like everyone's related to everybody.
But
it becomes really crazy.
Apparently, they well, I guess recently, Deadpool they retconned a little bit of the Secret Wars where they had.
We might as well jump around where they had
Deadpool was the one that showed Spider-Man where the symbiote was,
where the new costume is.
The wasp messes up everything, and she makes everyone forget that Deadpool was even there. That's why we don't remember Deadpool being there.
She's way more powerful in the comics than in the show, in the movies.
Oh yeah,
Wasp. Yeah, because she ends up hanging out. Oh my God, am I getting this wrong with Magneto?
Magneto were making out.
Her and Magneto end up kissing and stuff, getting all, you know, familiar with each other.
We gotta remember, Magneto at this time was the headmaster of the New Mutants.
Yes.
So he was on the good guy side, and that's why he kind of goes to the bad guy side, because he's willing to help out the X-Men. The X-Men are still kind of like getting used to trusting him, but like all of the other heroes are like, no, we don't like you.
This is right
before we get the story where the trial of Magneto and the Uncanny 200 is looming, in the aftermath of this.
And that is a huge thing. Magneto actually gets placed with all the X-Men and Avengers and everybody in the beginning. And I'm sorry, I can't name everybody every time. It's annoying. And then he kind of goes off and starts doing his own thing. And they find all these different like bases and palaces and all this crazy stuff with wild technology that somehow some of these guys are intuitive to know how to use. Like, obviously, if you're, Professor X is even here, actually. Mm-hmm. And he's not the field commander of the X-Men at this point. Storm is, not Cyclops.
Yeah.
Cyclops
is often with with everybody else.
And it's old school Storm. She's still got the mohawk and everything in this one, which is cool. Kind of the older X-Men from the Nintendo games and stuff like that. If anybody, whatever age group is looking at. And she kind of brings that back in X-Men 97, which is pretty cool. But they have a little bit of a, her and Professor X have some contention. Like he's like, oh, this is a big problem. My X-Men, I shall lead you to victory sort of thing. And she's like, yo, dude, hey, I'm the freaking boss. Like we're in the field. And he goes, this is too important. Kind of takes her command from her. And they have a little bit of back and forth there that I think is pretty unique for people to see, you know, and especially them kind of electing Captain America from a whole different group. And there's some really good dialogue between him and like Wolverine about where are you guys when the X-Men need you and mutants need to be
saved.
Yeah,
we're always there for the world.
Yeah, you're always saving New York and we're off to stuff, essentially. And that's
a running theme throughout, and that's something that in more recent years that like Captain America has like gone out of his way, the way to like be like, you know what, we haven't always been there. For like they're always saving everybody at the time, but like when it's just the X-Men fighting something, you know, they'll help us on Avengers related stuff, but we never help them on X-Men related stuff.
Right.
And they've really tried addressing that in recent years, trying to break down that like those like walls and stuff like that between the two sides to like really help get the public trust in it too. Because like, you know, with Captain America leading the Uncanny Avengers, which was a team of X-Men and Avengers, to show that like, you know, they can book. Because we've had mutants on the Avengers before. But you never really had any Avengers like that were only Avengers first jump onto the X-Men. You know, you've had like Beast was on the Avengers for a while, Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver, stuff like that. But you never had like an Avenger jump on over there, because you had to be a mutant first, you know, in most cases. You know, most of the X-Men are mutants. There's only a few that really technically aren't, like Juggernaut and Longshot.
Which that whole idea is really weird. It's still weird to me that they classify. So I feel like mutants be like, oh, hey, you're a meta-human, so you're not human. You have like, oh, let's take Wonder Man, for example. You're an ionic being.
Yeah.
okay, cool, come hang out. Like, there's like, what? Why would you be like, oh, you don't know anything because you were born a human and then you got your powers. Wait, it's the same way that you were born human, yeah, and then your mutant powers developed when you were a teenager.
Powers popped up when you were a teenager.
So, yeah, like, what's the difference between any of us? Nothing. Like, just...
I mean, if you want to go meta with it, it was just Stan Lee being like, I'm tired of making origin stories.
Yeah, that was his thing. Yeah, it's not the it also spoke a lot to
like the folly of like just like racism in general. Like, you know, why are you hating on like, you know, the guy who was born with this power, but like you're worshiping like Sarge, who can like, you know, blow up a school with his family. He did that when he went Nova against like the against the Skrulls, and he torched, you know, Empire University to save the day. But they didn't know that. But, like, no, this guy is like, he has this super.
We lost you there.
Did you?
He was given his powers by accident. It's like, well, what about this poor dude? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. This is such a wild story. So, yeah, I mean, you guys, Nino and Charles here, you guys were rap about it for a second, because I mean, like, some of the bigger plot points are kind of the fun stuff to talk about.
Yeah.
But outside of that, like, I mean, there's a lot. It's a very deeper story than you would think. It's not so surface level, like, hey, we're just going to put these guys against each other and bang them into each other, like playing on their, you know, your living room floor. It's there's so much.
Well, I think it's cool how Doom stole Galactus's power first and then went to take on the Beyonder, and then Beyonder mm-hmm. like beat the shit out of him. And when I guess he that let
cover,
his
it's a Secret War of 10 is amazing.
He let his guard down, and then Doom took his power too.
Yeah, Doom basically kind of almost has like Infinity Stone levels of power at this point, like reshaping reality and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what? Actually, I don't know who.
He's done that with the cosmic the power of cosmic from the Surfer too. Mm-hmm. He's taken it from, you know, him.
Who, Doom did?
Yeah.
Yeah, Doom. Oh, yeah. Doom, I mean, Doom
was,
is
that was kind of in Fantastic Four too when they came out, where Doctor Doom was
that
like,
was referenced.
Doctor Doom was like, "Can I see that board?" And Silver Surfer's like, "Yeah, you seem trustworthy." Ha ha, dumbass.
Got him.
Your last name is Doom. I can't possibly think anything badly of you. Yeah.
And that's why Silver Surfer's not going to be in the new movie. I'm kidding.
Because he gives up his board.
Yeah.
Gave it to he lost it to his ex-wife in the divorce, man.
Yeah,
that's
but
it, why.
Yeah, but it's a sweet boy.
She's not going to let that happen.
That's why Shala Ball is the new Silver Surfer.
just an alternate version.
No, yeah, she's another Herald of Galactus, which is kind of interesting. So Galactus actually takes up watch, kind of just standing over that little town. They find a town with like people who live in it in the story, and to the point where who's the flame guy from Fantastic Four?
Human Torch
like falls in love with the local, and then. Ironically,
I remember that,
which is kind of weird.
That's his thing, though. He like bang.
He falls in love. Captain Kirk, right?
He's like the Keith of.
Wears his heart on his sleeve. So he falls in love with this chick.
We lost Charles.
We lost him. He's coming back.
We officially lost him.
And then,
go ahead. Keep going.
You know, he's the Captain Kirk of the series, sort of. And then Colossus sort of catches feelings for the same local in like a thing, but the entire time he's complaining, but he wants to get off the planet. Everybody wants to go home, right? Somebody's got a pregnant. I think, does Reed Richards have a pregnant wife at the time?
I don't remember.
Yeah, I think
it's
that's
been
why
so many
Sue stays back.
Yeah. Cause she couldn't go fight. Cause obviously she's got to care for the baby.
She's with Franklin at that point.
Yeah. And, a couple other people stay back too, obviously, but, you know, Colossus starts catching these weird feelings for the same girl. And Colossus is also in love with Kitty Pride, who's at the time, like, you know, his world, and he wants to get off this world to get back to her. So it's really weird. It's kind of an interesting, it's interesting dynamic. Take on the psyche of some of these characters and stuff like that.
He ends up splitting up him and Kitty when they get back. Like, that's the end of his relationship with Kitty Pride for a while, because mm-hmm. like he wanted to go all in with her. She was like, yeah, I kind of want to go all in with him, but they're both like kind of young, especially her. She was a lot more on the younger side. And then when he gets back, he's like completely like aloof from her. Like, he's just like heartbroken, and it really causes this whole beginning of the end for their relationship. Aww. It never quite hits the scene. Even after they got engaged 6%. And they were going to get married. It's mm-hmm. just like, yeah, it just didn't work.
What was it? What was that thing? Eight
6%.
You have a 1 in 8 chance of marrying somebody you meet, mm-hmm. like that you're dating, and then all marriages have a 50% chance of lasting. So
sure.
a lot of a good relationship is pure luck because you have like a 6% chance of actually going the distance with a lover, you know, mm-hmm. which is crazy. And fact, we learned that from a comedic thing recently. But it applies to all these people too, even though they're not real, or maybe they are.
They're real
enough, right? Anyway, art is a reflection of reality. So there's some of that stuff going on, and it just gets crazy. We haven't even talked about any of the battles. Like one of my favorite points is when they start fighting around the volcano, when they throw it on them on top of the good guys. The bad guys win that one.
Yeah, I seem to have a vague recollection of this.
The famous Hulk cover with him holding up the entire mountain, yeah. which has been like yeah. homaged like so many times since.
And that's a pickle, right? Because they're like going to run out of air. And they don't know what to do, and they kind of get saved.
Then Reed Richards MacGyvers everything.
He starts MacGyvering stuff. And how they punch out of that one?
They Reed Richards MacGyvers everything. They shoot a repulsor blast through Iron Man's armor, and it goes through the mountain.
And he starts collecting. And this is one of the things about Dr. Doom I like too. Like they literally just start piecemealing technology together. That you know, in reality, if we're stuck under this mountain and we're like, hey, we got to make a super laser. I'm like, I just need one more battery and it's not going to be there. Right. Or like I need a resistor of, you know, whatever, mm-hmm. wherever, you know, tolerances. And these guys are literally like, just give me that part of your armor. Give me your left shoe. It's like the dude I've made bongs with less, you know, and he makes a super powerful laser and just blasts everybody out, which is pretty cool. That's a good scene.
Well, he made it in a cave with a box of scraps, you know,
they got to say it with that inflection.
At the same time, the bad guys yeah. are like, hey, look at this spaceship that has guns on it that they want us to fight. Obviously there's some things on the, you know, set up to kind of continue the battle. And they're like, oh, sweet. Well, how do you use it? And you're like, oh, I don't know. It's kind of intuitive. Alien technology. Mm-hmm. Just for some reason I can make it work. Mm-hmm. It's pretty cool. And you know, I jump into a spaceship. I'm going to be like, where's the on button? like that could, that,
I got this.
Yeah, I got this. Hold my beer. Watch this. But yeah, it's a cool story, man, for sure. Is there any other big high points of this stuff you guys want to hit?
I mean, obviously the one we've danced around a little bit with the symbiote, but this is not the first appearance of Venom, because Venom's not until the merge of Brock and the symbiote. But this is where the Venom saga starts.
Okay, so
you know we get the suit. We get Julia Carpenter, the second Spider-Woman, for the first time.
That's her first appearance. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Titania. You mentioned Titania, but like her and Volcano, this is their first time appearing, and Titania becomes like a major player. Like she was in the live version of her was in the She-Hulk series on Disney Plus.
And at this point,
she was in love with Absorbing Man.
Absorbing Man, yeah, which is cool. Molecule Man actually gets some segments. I thought that was with Ultron or something like that. He was like, "You're the only one who can do this."
Owen Reese, the Molecule Man, becomes a major. A lot of this gets really like the Secret War that was done like, you know, about 10 years ago by Jonathan Hickman. It really is a love letter to the original here, and it plays with Doctor Doom ruling. Because like we find out the Beyonders aren't what we thought they were a couple of different times. We find out from Brian Bendis that the Beyonder during Secret Wars was inhuman. Mm-hmm. And then we find out during Hickman's run that the Beyonders are an entire race of beings. And the one that we encountered during the battle world and stuff like that is an infant version of them. He's not even like their final form, and there's a whole bunch of them out there.
Yeah,
and it's a really cool thing. But like, it's when you see like all of these characters, like the way they come back, like Venom obviously is the one of the biggest legacies of this is like, you know, this brings the symbiote to Earth, and like how many stories have been mined just from that one little thing. You know, it's like countless, like hundreds of issues of like, you know, different crossover events, you know, Venom, Carnage, everything stems from that one little change of suit that no one knew at the time was going to be this gigantic thing. And it's funny to see how, like, you have this really cool story and then, like, successive writers, like, you know, take something and they're like, hey, what if we made it this? And, you know, it's fun to see how that, how, like, that's one of the things I like about comics is that these stories that are not meant to be standalone, and like you can, like, you know, kind of play with some of the toys in the toy box a little bit, and you don't always have to put them back in neatly. You know, you can kind of change them around, you know, and have some fun with it.
Absolutely.
So it's cool to see when it works like that, and you're not just, like, you know, completely destroying the meaning of a character. It's like these are things that actually worked within the scope of the characters without contradicting anything, making anything too crazy. And it's fun to see, like, you know, how the ramifications, because a lot of these big events, like, nowadays, they happen too fast for the status quo to ever really set in.
Right.
It's like I mentioned, Fear itself was like a really interesting storyline where you have, like, you know, Odin's long lost brother coming back and, like, you know, wreaking havoc, you know, the god of fear, like, react, you know, going all through the Marvel universe, and they do these big grandiose things. They turn all of Paris into stone by the gray gargoyle.
Yeah.
Thor is killed, you know, like, you know, Bucky is killed or whatever. And then, like, literally within the epilogue, they undo all three of those things. It's like everything that happened major is immediately undone. And it's like, what's the point of it? Like, what's this? You can't have this Marvel, just everything changes forever and then nothing actually comes of it. Like, this was something you can actually draw a through line. This is where it began. There's so much stuff that came right from this. And that's, right. That's just a cool thing to me.
Yeah. Absolutely, man. And, you know, and Secret Wars, one of the great comic book sagas of the time.
We're getting
and
a movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty absolutely exciting. 2027, but still this, I mean, if they,
this will be an MCU film.
The cool thing about this is
Avengers Secret War,
they
right?
could literally, because of, you know, the multiverse, they could pull everybody. And if they stick to the script, make a really cool movie. You know, I'm sure it's going to be updated.
Secret Wars 2 was kind of bad. It was like one of those inevitable, like, you know, like sequels just to have a sequel, like, you know, that came out. Like,
well, yeah, they wanted an event
and trying to figure out.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the one that Hickman did, it had all of these Earths were, like, basically smashing into each other. There was no way to stop this. And, like, every, like, one Earth had to survive. And the Illuminati, which we saw some of in the Doctor Strange and the Matters in the Multiverse movie, like, they're behind the scenes trying to stop this. And it becomes obvious that it's not going to happen. In the end, Doctor Doom creates this, you know, this patchwork, you know, a new battle world. But it's not just a battle world that's like, you know, hey, let's everyone get around. It's made up of all of these different timelines and stories. So we have the Marvel Zombies verse, a world where Ultron, like in the Age of Ultron storyline, is completely taken over.
Mm-hmm.
There's one in the 1602 universe that, like, Neil Gaiman wrote years ago. That's that was a cool one. Like a reimagining of characters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's all of those different things. It's like, imagine Spider-Verse, but like, you know, like what we saw in the movies, but all of these little parts of Battleworld are a different, not just a different, like, climate or whatever, but like all of these different, like, alternate realities. And old man Logan's, you know, world is there that we've seen across the Marvel universe all of these years thrown into one place. And then the ultimate universe, of course, is there. And in the end, it has, like, you know, the Molecule Man helping Reed Richards and Franklin Richards rebuild the entire universe. And it's a really cool story. But Dr. Doom is, like, large and in charge, and his face is clean.
Mm-hmm.
And he starts learning how to become a hero in it. Like, he comes away with it, like,
yeah,
I kind of liked being on the good guys. And he takes over for Iron Man. When Iron Man goes down after the Civil War II storyline, you know, he becomes a new Iron Man.
Mm-hmm.
And he has his own armor, and he's a good guy for a while. And that was a storyline that didn't do enough with, but seeing this, like, whole, like, you know, playing with the multiverse and stuff like that, you can really do a lot with it.
Hmm.
Awesome, man.
Yeah, man. The freaking great, man. Everybody get out there, read some Secret Wars.
Yeah,
I know
for
it
sure
sounds like I'm sponsored by Marvel, like
not
being
great,
paid
man
to advertise this comic, but man, what a great story.
Yeah, absolutely. And I appreciate
even the
guys
cover, even the cover of 10. Just check out the cover of Marvel of Secret Wars number 10.
Eight's
that's
cool.
The one with that's the eight's cool, but 10 is the one where you've got, you know, 10 is the one where you've got the Doctor Doom like, you know, right, like with the powers, like his suit's all ripped up. He's, yeah, he's got his like, mm-hmm, you know, super cosmic, and somehow like the guard on his mouth is open, like he's yelling, like, which you shouldn't be able to do because it's like metal. Yeah. But it's like when Spider-Man's eyes narrow. Yeah, it's
exactly.
Like,
what's like going on here?
You're wearing a mask. Yeah, I get it.
But like eight is obviously the one where we first see, like, you know, the black suit, like, and on the cover and stuff like that. That's
real
awesome.
Quick, we've talked about the Venom thing, so everybody's suits get busted up. Man, these guys really go ham. People are bleeding, mm-hmm, there's open wounds, and an old Spidey, his suit is crazy. I mean, this guy beat all of the X-Men up in one go in this story, like, really cool. Like, Spider-Man's way more powerful than I think people give him credit for too.
In recent issues, what's his face, Captain America was saying, like, you know, like, I gotta remember, like, you know, he can, like, I'm not as strong as Spider-Man, like, he is a lot stronger. I don't give him enough credit for, like, pulling his punches when he's like fighting dudes, because he'll end your shit, you
know? Yeah.
If he wants to, he's strong.
He can put 20,000 or get 20 tons over his head. That's a lot.
That's a lot of weight.
Yeah.
He's 22,000 pounds. Yeah. So
that's a lot.
And on that, so like Spidey's all busted up and he goes, hey man, like, oh, they're like, hey, we got this suit machine. It goes, fixes all your stuff. And, you know, he goes and finds the wrong machine, which happens to have a symbiote in it. And he puts it on and his suit turns black and he goes, oh man, this is great. Like, this looks cool, right? And it does look super cool.
It was the coolest looking change to Spider-Man that had ever taken
place. It's wicked, man. It really is.
Out of all his costumes, I still think that will always be my favorite. Like, I kind of hate that there's a Venom, because I love that black Spider-Man costume. I got that
picture right there. Yep. Yeah, Spider-Man black suit.
I like the black one, and I like Ben Reilly's suit that had like the extra, like that just had like the legs drawn on a little bit differently, yeah, like when he was Ben Reilly in the suit.
Okay,
like I like that suit, but it's also fun to see like how the characters, like some of the ones like Titania is created for this. Now obviously Julia Carpenter, mm-hmm, became a huge thing. Now she's Madame Web in the comic, mm-hmm, book. She's, mm-hmm, the new Madame Web, but Julia Carpenter coming into it, but Titania, like her relationship with Absorb Man, you know, Carl Creel, is this like love story that like transcends like, you know, villainy, that to a point where there's like, yeah, there's a point where she has cancer and Carl Creel, like he kidnaps Dr. Foster, Jane Foster, to like try and cure her.
Yeah.
And there's a really cool, Marvel did this this 1 month called Nuff Said, where all of the issues had no words and, mm-hmm, they were all silent issues. And one of the storylines of it was I think it was Captain America 50 or something like that, somewhere around there. But he's fighting Absorbing Man, Captain America, and like he's like breaking into, like he's like robbing banks, stuff like that. And he finds out, the big twist is that he was doing it because he needed money to buy a Christmas present for Titania.
Awesome.
And at the end, like Cap kind of lets him go, but like then brings the present to like their apartment and like watches them like outside just to see, and like, you know, and like Titania, like, you know, gets the gift that like makes their Christmas. And it's just a really interesting thing, like they do that, and they wind up like curing her cancer, like out of nowhere, kind of. And they finally like, they resolve that plot by doing another retcon. We love retcons.
They can cure her cancer, but they couldn't fix Captain Marvel's. Come on.
Well, you know what they found out? They found out that when she had cancer, she wasn't really her. She was copycat, Vanessa Carlisle.
Yeah. Copycat. And we're going to talk Vanessa Carlisle. We're going to talk some things, yeah, like that when 97 wraps up. There's some interesting.
Yeah, those who don't know, like if you want to call out real quick, is a funny thing is that when the first New Mutants 98 is the most expensive New Mutants comic, mm-hmm, you know, in the world, because it's got the first appearance of Gideon, who was a pretty cool player for a while, but it's got Domino in it and it's got Deadpool. You know, it's such a big thing, but they kind of didn't make it Domino anymore, because we find out like X-Force 19,
right,
that it was copycat, it was Vanessa Carlisle. And the one that's been with the X-Force the entire time has been, you know, her. So there's a big question of like, does it count as Domino's first appearance if it's not really Domino? And we find out that she's a clone, that she's actually not a clone, but she was captured the entire time and she's a shapeshifter. So it's one of those other things, the same thing with like Venom and stuff like that. It's the suit's first appearance, but not Venom's first appearance. It's, you know, it's kind of interesting to see, mm-hmm, like, you know, like when that sort of thing happens, when they change something, it's like, does it still count? Do I still get the points for this?
Right.
Like,
right.
How does that work? So it's just interesting to, yeah, see the little stuff like that.
Absolutely.
I like to see.
Yeah, man. Yeah, cool. For sure.
Man, well, we appreciate you coming in and sitting in with us for this very special one-year anniversary special episode focused specifically on Comic Man and one of the greatest Marvel sagas of the time, man. So,
yeah
we appreciate it, man. We're going to go ahead and let you go because we got to gear up and do some more episodes tonight. But once again, thanks for chilling with us for the Comic Man special of Zoomundo Podcast. I'm Doolin.
I'm Keith.
And I'm Nino.
And we have...
That's me. I'm Charles, the Comic Man.
There you go. Thanks for hanging out with us, guys. We're going to take a little 20-minute break, and we'll be back here in just a few minutes. Charles, we'll see you next time, brother.
Guys, stay safe.
All right, you too, man.
Have a good night. Yeah.
All right. Bye.